to the frozen tundra of Iowa. 3, 2, 1, Gary Kroger.
Thank you, Kenneth. I am Gary Kroger in the frozen tundra of Iowa, where it's up to 5 degrees today. Kenny, you are in what environment?
In Calabasas, and we're having honestly, it's nice here. It's like fall-like. It's 60 degrees.
So it's a little chilly.
It feels
for
like
you.
The fall. It's just very pleasant.
It's a little chilly.
I play golf.
You put on a warm wrap when you go outside.
Yeah.
In 60 degrees. Yeah.
Yeah.
Put a little
jacket.
Yeah. I've shoveled snow 7 times since last Wednesday. 7 times in subarctic weather.
Do you have a snow blowing machine?
I have a snow blower that broke down on. Oh, there's your dog. I think your dog's humping the couch, Kenny.
No, he's just.
He's just going in there to lie down.
He wants to go.
I have a snow blowing machine that broke on the 5th plow. And so many of my efforts have been with a shovel and my 2 young
sons.
That's
hard. That's hard.
My wife got it. It's very,
very
hard. My knees hurt.
And this is going on for a long time.
I'm falling apart here.
This is going on for a long time.
What this snow?
Your cold weather and this, and it's supposed to go on for long. It's not like a weekend thing. It's this.
Well,
is like...
it's warming up to in the 30s next week, which is that's like a thaw. That's put on the shorts again weather.
Right. Okay.
But that's just temporary. You know, in February it's going to come right back down to.
Well, I went 15. We went to Disneyland on Wednesday.
Well, that's either a wonderful time or a terrible
it was
time.
And listen. The thing about it is, you got a minute?
Yeah.
Okay. You know, first of all, if you said to me, pick a time of the year when you don't think Disneyland would be crowded, I would say in the middle of January on a Wednesday.
Yeah.
Okay?
However.
It was packed. It was sold out. My grandchildren are 5 and 2, so they go on the little toddler, especially the 2-year-old, put her on the little toddler ride.
Dumbo.
The teacups,
yeah.
Or even going through Minnie's house, you know.
Yeah.
Well, these are like for babies. These are for kids.
Right.
And yet
Peter
online,
Pan's Flight.
Online are all these adults, things from single adults to couples and whatever. They have no
And
children.
What's the line? 60 minutes these days? 30 minutes?
Almost, 45 minutes.
Okay, that's
and you're
a
trying
long
to
line.
Hold your, and you're trying to hold a 2-year-old baby and keep them, you know, going and patient. And you're looking around the line and you see all these people who are just adults riding kids rides.
So
why are they online?
So they're mucking up the line, right?
That line is long because they want to ride the line. And I took pictures of people. One old lady who was just by herself.
If you don't have a kid, you don't belong on Dumbo or the teacup.
Right.
The you observe them. I mean, who they are. They're people who were little kids going, oh, I love Dumbo so much. And they want to relive that. That's who they are.
I don't think that's it. I think they are people who go, I paid $700 for a ticket.
I'm going to go on every ride.
I'm going to go on every freaking ride.
I think you're right that there should be an age limit. Like there's a height limit for certain things because that is a ride for kids and kids should have at least have a fast pass, a free fast pass.
Why you want a teacup ride? Really? You're 55 years
they're
old.
They're reliving their childhood.
You know what? It's for children. The ride is designed for children, not for the purposes of nostalgia. Okay.
Okay.
It's really,
I think it should say that on the sign.
Yes.
This ride is not for purposes of nostalgia. This is for children.
Yeah.
So get
yeah.
your fat ass off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Signed, Walt Disney.
All right. Well.
All right, Kenny, I tend to agree with you. Hey, you know, I want to bring on our guest because we could go on forever about grousing about whatever. But Ileana Douglas is our guest, the famous Ileana Douglas. Actress,
say some of her
author.
Credits. Some of her credits.
Cape Fear is one of my favorite, but my wife is crazy about
Goodfellas.
Her
she was in Goodfellas as well.
And Goodfellas, but my wife loves her guest spots on Grey's Anatomy. I mean, I first saw her, I think, on New York Stories, directed by Martin Scorsese, who she went on to have a relationship with together for a while. But I mean, she's done every medium, and now she's an author. She has been for a while. She's a filmmaker. Yeah. So we are quite honored, are we not?
We are.
We are. So How about I bring her out?
I would appreciate that.
Kenny, if you don't mind, I'd like to introduce our guest. I'm very excited
I
about our
have no
guest.
objection, Mr.
You
Kroger. You may
have no
proceed.
objection. I don't really know where to begin. Ileana Douglas is our guest. Such a complicated life, full life, the wearer of many hats. I know Ileana as an actor, but of course, as a filmmaker, a historian, an author, that we're going to talk about her book that is, she's on a book tour right now. I don't know where to begin. So I'm going to begin by just bringing you out. Ileana, welcome to the humble little Gary and Kenny show. You are, in my estimation, the most illustrious guest we've had.
I love it.
Illustrious.
Okay,
Wow.
I will try to live up to.
Oh, this, the bar's very low. Don't worry about that. It's
Yeah,
very
yeah,
low.
yeah, yeah. When Lee Kernis, who was a good friend of mine and your manager, said, she wrote this book, Connecticut in the Movies, you got to read it. And I was like, it really doesn't sound that fascinating. I'll be honest with you, just from the title. But it is fascinating because it's not just movies that were made in Connecticut, it
Yes.
really is. A kind of a history of movies and our country. And the
Yes.
insights that you put into each movie, it's not just a list of movies, but the behind the scenes stuff. I mean, the research in this thing is just floored me. And I found
Oh.
that, and by the way, you have a great sense of humor, so it makes the book incredibly entertaining.
Thank you.
Yes.
I
But how
try
much
to.
research, how long did it take you to write this book?
I mean, relatively compared to other books, it was 2 years, so it's almost not that, the hardest part was right. I wrote the majority of the essays about the book, and then I went on a road trip throughout the state and was collecting photographs. So it is very much a coffee table book.
But you
So
watched all these movies. You've seen all these movies.
yes, in fact, I saw more than 100 movies because some movies actually did not make the book. I mean, the book is 350 pages long, and so I could not include, every film that was ever made in Connecticut or mentions Connecticut. And so although there, people would ask, oh, you didn't put Pillow Talk in or something,
Right.
you have to. For me, it's a road trip, and you don't get to stop at every
Well,
stop
of
along
course
the way.
not. I was curious because I want reading the book. I wanted to see all these movies, some again and some I've never
Yeah.
seen.
I love Connecticut, but I love Connecticut from the image that I have con of Connecticut, which is essentially from the movies. And so
Right.
your book sort of explores, did Connecticut culture come from the movies or are the movies reflecting true Connecticut culture?
Yes. Yes,
Are you
it
tracking my question? I mean, which came
absolutely,
first?
absolutely. I think it begins with organic origins in that in the 20s and 30s, there were actors on Broadway that were buying country homes here in Connecticut.
Mr. Blandings builds his dream house. That's my concept of Connecticut right there.
Right.
Well, that's the in the beginning, I call them, they're transformational comedies. Country, I call it country living. Country living cures you. All the movies of the early 30s before we get to Blandings, all of the plots are somebody comes from a rich family in New York, they're in a loveless marriage, and they go to Connecticut and they have a transformational experience. Really, because they find their authentic selves in the country. Where this starts to change is with Mr. Blandings. It is not only the transformation, it's the idea, which I think is very American in this beginning of suburbia, which is it's superior living. It's getting away from your cramped New York apartment and living in the right place in Connecticut. And it's kind of upwardly mobile. And that to me is where the beginning of Connecticut as a brand begins, different than other bedroom communities like Westchester or Red Hook, New Jersey. Connecticut signals superior cultural living. And we've never really veered from that. But as we get into the 50s, that's why I say the book is a road trip movie. Then we start to see the cracks in suburbia with films like Gentleman's Agreement and The Man in the Gray Flannel Suit. And then by the time we get to the 60s, it's Let It All Hang Out, 60s sex comedies, and we start to deconstruct suburbia. So that's what I found so fascinating was this perception of Connecticut that seems to change as the culture changes. But we're always using Connecticut as the place, as the
Right.
location. You know, it's standing in for what was happening in America.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well,
Well, I'll
you know,
tell you,
and then.
besides that, besides just even the hit, the connection with Connecticut and the making movies there, anybody who's interested in the in knowing who were the great filmmakers and their connection to Connecticut, it's an amazing. Everybody should read it who's interested in film, because you talk about directors and writers and playwrights who are from, not only from that area, from Connecticut, but made their stories, from Eugene O'Neill to Arthur Miller. I mean, great stories. And the movie makers, and how movies came together and who they chose. I mean, you do really, it's a really industry book in a lot of ways. And if you're interested in knowing the people involved in making this business, it's those people, it's the same people. It's a great book, great book.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, again, I devoted a whole chapter to Eugene O'Neill because although I went to acting school and did Eugene O'Neill plays and watched him on Broadway, no one ever talked about the idea that he was raised in Connecticut, that these
Yeah.
people that he's writing, Ah, Wilderness and Long Day's Journey Into Night are about the
That's
same
right.
childhood. And so to me, I said, well, this really encompasses Connecticut, the transformational nature, 4th of July. Life on the new, you know, in New London, turn of the century, glamour, casinos, and then the fall of New London. And it's yet another town that is past its prime. And that's what he writes about in Long Day's Journey Into Night. And
Right. Well, and
we need to tie that to our state. Go ahead.
I just want to say, it's sort of a synopsis, because people are watching and they're listening. And this is a book for film buffs, yes. It's a book for people interested in Connecticut, yes. But like Kenny said, it's also about Americana. And even, Eugene O'Neill, it wasn't just about that specific esoteric part of the world. We all related to the struggles, to the
Yeah, the families.
factories
The
and the
families.
fabric and the families. So
Yeah.
your book really does take us on a story of Connecticut, yes, movies in Connecticut,
Yeah,
yes.
no,
But
great
I
book.
related to it because I can't even find the words. It's the American experience. It's the human experience through the lens that you offer as a historian of films being made in Connecticut. It's a book for everyone, is what I'm
Yeah.
saying.
Can I make a segue here? Because I just want to talk about the impact that movies have had. Obviously, you write about this in your book. And then, of course, when I looked up this book and I saw your other book, which was called I Blame Dennis Hopper,
Dennis
I had to
Hopper, which
go.
is,
I had to
now
read that, because I
there's the
have to
greatest
find out
title
why you possibly blame
ever.
Dennis Hopper. So I read that. But the thing about it is, to me, as I'm reading these books, and it brings back enormous memories, is the different movies that we all had this shared, powerful experience with, that we had a collective thing that really changed our life. Now, I know that Easy Rider had a great impact on your dad, as you talk about. The Swimmer had a great impact on me. And by the way, I thought it was a Beverly Hills movie, all these. I thought he was swimming across Beverly Hills. But that was just in my memory. I saw that when I was 14. And I was like, wow, that blew me away. We all had those kind of movies. I don't know if those movies exist anymore, do they? Were people, are there movies that are changing people's lives in the way that I think it impacted us?
I don't think so. You know, what's been interesting about going on the book tour, and in some instances, we've screened The Swimmer and people talk afterwards, and it brings back such nostalgic feelings. For me and others, because that was so much a part of my childhood. You'd go out with family and you'd see a movie And then you'd go to an ice cream shop afterwards, and everybody would talk about the movies. Or sometimes you'd go to a movie that your parents liked and you didn't really understand it, but I'd sit in the back seat and listen to them. And that was so much a part of our culture. And
Yeah.
people don't get to talk except on Facebook or Twitter
Right.
about their opinions. And so when you're having a shared experience,
Right. The experience is more disposable than it used to be. It's
yeah.
not shared together. For me, it was The Graduate. That was the movie, the seminal film for me to talk with my parents. What was this about? Is this, is this what I have to expect? But it was a shared experience and it was an event. So we would take that event back home with us.
Yeah.
We were watching TV at our leisure, going to the bathroom. It feels different these days.
Well, I don't want to tell people why you blame Dennis Hopper, because I can read the book and it is a great story.
It
But
really is.
I want to just I first of all, I want people to know that you are the granddaughter of one of the great actors of all time, Melvin Douglas,
Yes.
which, I got to watch, in our generation, we watched old movies because I would watch the Million Dollar Movie on Channel 9.
Right.
Yeah. We would watch the old. I was familiar, even though I wasn't born in 1954. I saw all the movies from the 1930s and the 40s and the 50s because they played them on the local television station, as on Channel 5 or whatever those things, and that's where you saw those movies. So I'm familiar
Absolutely.
with all these things, and like I said, we have so much in common. A lot of the stories that you tell is like, I saw that movie, I had the same impression, but. Going back to your father went off and chose a very bohemian life.
Well, we all did. We were like crazy bohemian hippies, living in rural, uptight Connecticut, which again has framed a lot of my world view. So, what that whole chapter is about in, and each chapter in the book is devoted to a person, who, from the movies or a movie that in some way impacted my life, whether it was Marlon Brando, pretending I was Liza
I
Minnelli to
love
be.
your Richard Dreyfuss stuff.
Thank you.
Wow, because I identified with that so much. There was this guy who wasn't that great looking movie star, but he had the confidence and charisma and the charm that people would fall in love with him. And I said, he really has not gotten the recognition he deserves.
No, he got me through my whole childhood. I just pretended when I saw Richard Dreyfuss, I just don't know why. I just really, really identified with him, in The Goodbye Girl. And he was just a model for me of like, that's who I'm gonna be.
And for me too, because I was like, I wasn't the best looking kid and whatever, but I was charming and funny, and he was charming and funny and confident. It gave me a feeling of, well, maybe if I could just be as charming and funny as he is.
And he was smart,
Very smart. Ileana, I don't want to give, Kenny said, I don't want to give away, the Dennis Hopper story. It's a great title. It's a great book. But it's hard not to at least address that the influence that Easy Rider had going to the movies on your father changed your entire trajectory. You even made a comment like, I didn't know we were well off until we weren't well off anymore.
there's a wonderful picture which I actually found a negative of up in the attic, and that was what I wanted to be on the cover, but then we went with another picture. And but the caption under the picture says, "We were poor, but we were unhappy."
But what a change. What a double life then to go in and visit your grandfather in Manhattan,
Yeah,
who was sophisticated.
that was the whole arc of that story, and the whole arc of the book is how I am this insider outsider, and that as a coping mechanism, I would sometimes as a child pretend I was in the movie, in order to cope with everything, I was in this, Dennis Hopper, Easy Rider, childhood, not of my own choosing. Then I discovered, my grandfather's a famous movie star. And then I fell into kind of that world of wanting of sitting, you know, at his side and meeting people like Myrna Loy and famous playwrights.
Unbelievable.
And
Right.
so
And
I never felt like it was my life. I felt like, okay, now I'm in this movie. Now I'm in this glamour until lo and behold, I'm making movies.
right. And wasn't it Mike Nichols who observed in you, you're inside the movies and outside at the same time? Something like that?
It's a classic story describing me as I look back on it, because I was very good friends with this director. He's still a good friend, Glenn Gordon Caron, who directed the film Picture Perfect, Moonlighting. And I invited him because Mike Nichols was going to screen The Graduate, which, you know, I said, let's go see it. He's going to be there in person. And I'd never had met Mike Nichols, but, you know, I'd been doing movies obviously since for a while, and I'd done, and Picture Perfect was out. And so we went to see the screening, and I brought my Nichols and May album for him to sign. And he was chiding me. He's like, you're not going to give him that album. And I said, why not? It's like, you know, because I'm a fan. Like, I'm you. I love The Graduate. I love Catch 22, all these movies. So I said, yeah, I want to get him to sign it. So I handed over my album for him to sign, and he looked at me, obviously recognized me as an actor, which I was, for me, I'm a little shy. I was unexpected for me. And he said, he made this pronouncement of, and he said, you know what I like about you? He goes, you're in the movie, but then you're also, it's as if you're in the audience. He goes, somehow you got in the movie, but you're commenting to us in the audience. You know, like, look at what these people are doing. Isn't it crazy? How did I get in this movie? And I did have this epiphany, and I said, I think you've described my entire life. And that's when I knew he gave me the hook for what the through line of the book was going to be, because people had always said to me, well, you got to write a book, and you have such great stories, and you've had such a crazy life, and you've worked with all these people. But I never, and I always tell other writers this too, I never had a through line. You know, what's the connective tissue to being a great storyteller? I didn't want to just be a great storyteller. And when Mike Nichols said to me, you're in the movie and you're out of the movie, I said, that's my
That
point
there you
of view
go.
for the rest of my writing career, is that I'm very conscious now of writing when I'm in the movie, and now I'm outside observing the film, and I'm writing about people like Robert De Niro and Jane Fonda, people who I've worked with. So I have an experience both as an insider working with them, but I'm also an objective fan, and I've been an objective fan of their work from my childhood. And I think that gives me a unique perspective that I don't think any other film historian
It
has.
does. And again, we're plugging your books. Your perspective is very, very unique. You have a very warm, conversational, authentic narrative style.
Well, I'll tell
I
you,
think.
you mentioned that there's one part that also struck me that that you hit on, and I was like, wow, I felt the same way. You talk about you were, I guess, a young girl in Connecticut with your friends and the girlfriends, and you'd be sitting in the car and you'd be sitting in the back and you'd listen to them talking. And somehow you knew, even though you were quiet or whatever, and you were just listening to them, whatever, and whatever their chatter was, that somehow you knew you were different. And that somehow you knew you were going to go on and do something outside of this world.
Yes.
Or
And I
outside of
find
that, out of that. And I had the same experience where I would sit in the back, I was small or whatever, and I would just listen. And I kind of, even though they were the like the hot guys or the hot what, I had this feeling that some let it be, because I'm gonna go on and do something special.
I have the
I'm
same
done.
feeling. I think as
Yeah, and I
artists,
thought,
we
and
share
I was like,
that.
wow, I really identified with that. I thought it was very
Yeah.
good.
It's bittersweet to look back at yourself. I call it being a backseat kid. I never had the social status to be in the front seat, and I didn't, you know, we didn't have any money. I couldn't get a car. I had a bike, and so the, you know, you were always hanging on by a thread because I was funny, And I knew my, I kind of knew my role. So I knew I, I'm getting limited to getting beaten up if you could kind of be funny.
Well, that was
And
me. That was small, and that's I developed my
well,
sense of humor as a
yeah.
defense mechanism. Yeah,
I
but
was in the front seat, but only because I had the car and I was the driver while my good
oh,
looking
okay,
friends
wow.
made out in back. I was that guy.
And but you have those moments, and that's where I felt very much like that moment in American Graffiti where Richard Dreyfuss is sitting in the back seat and he's looking out the, and I saw something in him that he knows he's better than the people in the front seat. He knows now he's going to get out of this town and he's going to do something with his life, and they aren't. And it's something almost bittersweet that that I in fact cope with. Because when you, it's not that you feel you're better than the purple people, but you know that somehow you have an inner strength that you that is going to bring you places, and you can't.
Yeah, I don't think most people live thinking that they're creating art or want to create art or they're living in art. Certain of us, for whatever reason, because I relate to this, Kenny relates to this, to what you've been written, is that we're looking at this stuff going around us as if it's a movie, in a sense, as if we're in it ourselves. I always felt like a painter, kind of, within my own painting. And so
Well,
again, I'm always.
I always feel like, when I'm even in a particular situation, the sense that this might be in a movie, and how should I react so that I come across as the good guy.
I said to my ex-wife when we were breaking up, I said, if this is a movie, you're played by Sharon Stone and I'm Tom Hanks. The audience is rooting for me. Made her so angry, so angry.
I want to talk about Martin Scorsese, but only in this regard, because I don't know if people know, but you had a long relationship with Martin Scorsese, one of the great filmmakers of our time. But you were working with as a for a publicist, is how you first,
Yeah,
what was it?
I was working for a film publicist named Peggy Siegel, and they were I got hired to dub screams for Last Temptation Christ. And this was after I had already made a huge splash by Frank Perry putting me again completely accidentally. He came running in. They had a day player role, and he said, "You're an actress, right?" And I said, "Yes, Frank, I'm an actress who answers the phone." And he goes, "I think I have a part for you." He goes, "Do you think you could yell at Shelley Long?" I was like, "Who doesn't want to yell at Shelley Long?" He goes, he said, "Peggy, I'm taking her." And it was like, that's how I got my first job, like not by auditioning. So that's when people first discovered that I was an actress. Because again, in those days, if you were working in a professional environment, you weren't handing out your resume to people. Even though I secretly hoped that that would happen
It's
years.
like the Harrison Ford story. He's fixing the door of Coppola's office or something. Hey, kid, audition.
So now that people knew I was an actor, I sent my picture and resume for to Last Temptation of Christ. I had a picture of myself taken in a turban. The picture's in the book. I don't know what I was thinking, but I did. Those were the era. That was the, Issey Miyake period, I guess. So I had my head all wrapped up, and nothing ever came of it. I don't. Got any audition for Last Temptation of Christ. And then cut to whatever it was a year later, the girl said, "You're an actress, right?" And I said, "Yes, I am." And she said, "Do you think you could, come down and scream for Marty?" So that's was my
So then after that, then I mean, the list of movies that you've done, what was the first, what was it, Cape Fear that you did? Was that the
no,
first
no,
one?
New York Stories, right? New York
Oh, after
Stories.
After screaming and Last Temptation, then I just worked in New York Stories, and then here,
And then
and
Cape Fear, which, how was
Cape
that on
Fear.
set? Because it was such a frightening movie.
Oh
How
my
was that
God.
on set? Was it just a scary, I mean, De Niro is, I mean, in the movie, he's
Yes.
like frightening. I
No,
can't.
I mean, it wasn't, it, you know, obviously, I couldn't, I don't even think we'd get, I've read things online, you know, about people saying they wouldn't get to make that movie today, you know.
Yeah, do you think that's true?
We need an intimacy coordinator, God knows
Yeah.
what. They, you know, in those days, again, fresh out of acting, I just really wanted to do a good job in the movie. And when I had auditioned for it, I did an, you know, I did kind of an improv with De Niro, so that's probably what got me the job. And then, you know, doing the
Even
bars.
today, I find that movie just incredibly
Oh,
tense.
well, the
Phenomenal.
original as well, but it was a
Yeah.
really well
Yeah.
done
And then
remake.
after Cape Fear, another icon, good was it Goodfellas?
Oh, sorry, I missed Goodfellas. Jeez, I even know my own movies. It was good.
You should read your book.
How could I
Yeah,
miss
right.
that? New York Stories, Goodfellas.
Read your
Oh, okay.
Wikipedia.
So
Yeah.
it's Goodfellas first.
I
Right.
can't remember.
Well, yeah, I want to put a nice bow on this because again, you're touting your book, you're selling your book, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
I can't let you go before saying that my wife, the first thing when your name came up, she went, Dr. Alma from Grey's Anatomy. And the
Yes.
scene where you've got the doctor with OCD. I mean, she just told the scene in detail. She remembered it so well.
Yeah, that was you know, that was one of the hard, I realized that was one of the things I said, wow, I have such respect for them doing medical jargon, and that is not
Well, but you are,
yeah.
like I said at the beginning, illustrious. If we were just to look at your television career, look at your film career, so diverse. You're one of those people, I mean this sincerely, that when you're on stage, immediately the brand is quality. The brand is, this is going to be a worthwhile performance. You have so many things that are going on. You do so many things so well that it's really exciting to have you. But I want to make sure that we plug the book.
Yes.
So I know that I got it on Amazon, and I'm sure that anybody can, but it's at the bookstores, book clubs.
At all the bookstores, you can get it on Amazon. I have a Facebook page called Connecticut in the Movies where I'm doing various events. I was just in Palm Springs. I'm doing tons of events around Connecticut if people are in Connecticut.
I'm surprised they're not going to do a statue of you in Connecticut.
They probably will.
They
That's
probably
soon
they need to at
enough.
least name
There'll
a
be a
street. They
movie.
need to at least
They'll
name
make
a
a
highway
movie.
after you or a
Yeah.
bridge.
I still have to do more. I feel like I'm only
Well, that is
like,
my next. What's next? Are you going to write another book or what's the
yeah,
plan?
what's next?
I'm definitely going to write another book. It's going to be another movie book. I have a sort of a subject in mind, but I'm also working on some scripts, you know, for potential that would be Connecticut based. A film and a TV show, because I do think the area of dark suburbia, you know, it would be a great theme for, you know, for a film or and
Wait till I get to Connecticut. You might be looking for a leading man.
yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I
Well, I
will.
think that the darkness, the frightening thing about suburbia nowadays is the cost of homes.
Yes.
Well, yes. Although there are pockets of Connecticut that are okay. That's why we're looking there. I mean, you
Right.
know.
Now they say that Connecticut is expensive, but it's not as bad as California.
No,
California.
God, no.
No,
So.
absolutely. You know, I just want to ask this. Going, me and Gary are kind of like the two old men in the Muppet movies that were on the balcony complaining about everything that's going on in the world today.
How's your
The
bladder?
things
Is
that
that where you're going?
I the thing that I'm curious about is, well, I mean, I complain about what's going on with the movies today. You know,
Yeah.
everything's this Marvel movie or this movie, and what movie do you see? And I'm not going to the movie theaters anymore because it's not, you know, like. Are they movies that I really want to see? Are they 3 hours long? I mean, are you optimistic, pessimistic? What do you think? I mean, I guess, you know, it's just we're going to jolt, they'll always make movies, but we'll just consume them in a way that's so different.
Yes, I mean, I think that's true, and I think we have to just accept that, and that's just the way it is. I think that unfortunately, the 1-2 punch of COVID and then the strike was not great for, you know,
Yeah.
audiences, you know,
Yeah.
movies. And I don't think we'll ever be, I think we'll always have the great experience. Like people will want to come to see a movie. Sometimes I think there's more excitement about a revival movie, you know, people's reaction to The Swimmer, sold out audiences, you know, and we're playing next to Oppenheimer and other movies that there is something fun about rediscovering a movie. You know, sometimes fathers are taking their daughters or sons or whatever. They saw the movie and now they're taking their kids to see it. So, I mean, I think we'll always have that shared experience, but it's unfortunately, I think I was very blessed to, again, like grow up in a time in the 80s, and I was been thinking about it a lot lately. Just I was living in New York at the height of what the 80s was, and getting to work with Steve Urkel and seeing all that, you know, craziness, then being in the movies in the 90s and going to Sundance and the, you know,
Well,
I don't
it's
know if you've
interesting. It was actually it turned out to be a good time to be alive for all of us, because I ask young people today and they say they'd rather live in a world where they didn't have the internet. They'd
Yeah.
rather, yeah, the internet has really made it very difficult for their lives socially and self-esteem wise and everything. So
Yeah.
yeah, we actually it
Noticed.
actually turned out pretty good for us.
I
Yeah.
noticed it again, and that when I'm on, like when I was doing Goliath and Billy Bob Thornton is on the set and Beau Bridges and Dennis Quaid, you know, again, I was like, set me loose. You know, I was talking to all of them about the different movies they were in, and we're all sitting around and we're talking about movies and sharing stories. And when I've done other movies where everyone is in their 20s and 30s, we go to our chairs and it's totally silent and everybody is on their phone. And that is the difference. I mean, it's palpable for somebody like me who's a talker and a historian and wants to hear stories. It's incredibly difficult, you know, to get stories out of people. I worked with a girl who's on a big television show, and I kept trying to say to her, like, what was he? I remember when you did this, and what was it? She's like, you know, she's doing, oh, it's okay, it's great, you know. And I don't have the same, you just can't get good information out of them anymore.
Yeah,
So
I
I
know.
think at the beginning of I Blame It on Dennis Hopper, don't you say, maybe in the preface, this is not a memoir? You yes.
say something like that. Well, however, would you consider writing a memoir?
Oh, definitely. Are you kidding? I've got
That,
lots
that's coming,
of,
right?
oh my goodness. I've got I want to do tell all.
Yeah. Oh, hey,
When
come on
you
the show
do,
when you've done
would you come back
that.
on the show
Please
and
don't. Kenny likes dirt. He
I
likes
do. I
dirt. He
like the
likes
dirt as
the more
well.
salacious you can
It's
get.
not salacious. It's not that, but it's interesting anecdotes. I don't, it's not necessarily salacious, but I love behind the scenes show business stories.
Especially when it's salacious.
I don't, you know, my intent, because when I wrote, right, even I blame Dennis Hopper, when I write about people, I always like, I read it and I read it again, and I don't really want to be, unless the person, you know, there's like five people that I'm like, yeah, I can't wait to write about them. I can't wait to say, what a jerk. I mean, it's mainly like, I don't want to hurt anyone, but it is, would be fun to say, you
There are stories that belong
know,
to
he's a
you,
jerk.
and you have the right to tell them, you
I
know?
think so too. I think so too. I think some
They
people.
happen
Listen,
to you, even.
I just read an article about Marlon Brando and Charlie Chaplin. And Charlie Chaplin was a drag. And
Yeah.
Marlon Brando came out and said totally that he was the meanest person he's ever met.
Yeah. And, you
And
know, he
yeah.
wasn't saying nice things about Charlie Chaplin. Charlie Chaplin was still alive, but he called him out and said, you know, this is what he really was behind the scenes. So I
Yeah.
think it's
It's
okay.
challenge, you know, that's always the challenge, because I'm such a movie fan. You don't want to totally destroy. If somebody has an image of someone, it's complicated.
Is complete. Yeah.
I'm not here to tear down an image for the public, because sometimes I, you know, there are things, and If somebody wrote, I don't know if you remember, but you get these things, and Danny Kaye and Laurence Olivier had an affair, and I'm like, okay,
Yeah,
he didn't even is
it
that.
doesn't help anything.
Yeah,
Doesn't
that's
move the life's
I don't
needle.
care about that stuff. But the thing I will qualify the Marlon Brando story by saying that he did kept saying, I recognize that Charlie Chaplin is a comic genius. I
Right.
realize
Yeah.
that his work is unbelievable. I
Yes.
think he's, incredible. But I will tell you
He's an
that to
asshole.
work with was the darkest
Yeah.
experience I've ever had, professional dark experience I
Which
ever
I
had.
think that's fair
He
to tell.
qualified it. I
There's
think that's fair. Yeah.
the reason I did the format of the book the way I did is that there's so many more people I want to, in my own way, profile people that I've worked with, people that are fascinating to me. In this book, I spent a lot of time writing about Nick Nolte because I've worked with Nick Nolte, and he's somebody that I want to return to and profile him, or De Niro, people like that. There are people that I have worked with or had an experience with that I think, wow, nobody's really written about, the impact
Right.
Jason Robards, or
Yeah.
just people that mean a lot to me, both as a movie fan and then someone who I've had an actual kind of experience with. I
Yeah.
believe.
No, I mean, I do think you have to, it's not just the point of writing to tell stories as much as it is to try to understand people who had great impact on you. I mean,
Yes.
Abraham Lincoln had great impact on everybody, and I'm just fascinated by the behind the scenes story. So I want to know everything about him, but I feel the same way about certain artists that I watch and see that. Yeah, I want to know what the hell you want to get as inside as you possibly can to know those people.
Would you want to find out that Abraham Lincoln was having an affair with Senator Douglas? That what you're looking for?
No, but it's a great
Ileana,
idea. It's a great idea for a series.
Ileana, we're going to be respectful of your time because
Thank
we
you.
know you're on a book tour and you have lots of other things to do. I want to remind everyone that the new book is Connecticut in the Movies. It's absolutely fascinating.
I'm
I
going to ask one
want
last question, Gary, if I
to. Okay,
may.
go ahead. Go ahead.
Have you seen all the movies that have been nominated for Academy or are about to be nominated for Academy Award?
I have, and I have voted, yes. And
Okay.
I, as I say every year, what I personally w like is nowhere near ever gonna
The
be
popular taste.
the movies that are gonna, that are gonna probably win. It's kind of it, there
No, I'm the
isn't
same
really
way.
a surprise anymore. But ha as the my only issue with the Academy is that it used to be for excellence in acting, and it is no longer about excellence really in acting. It's more about, this feels right for the time and for the culture. And I can't say, being an Academy member, whether that is right or wrong, but I come from a school where I to me, it should. I would have loved to keep the purity that it's simply about the acting, but that is no longer the case. And 90% of the movies are, about you feel like you're in a Chinese war camp, like being re-educated.
Yeah, true. Yeah, that's
And
true.
they're
But
not.
did you watch these movies in a movie theater or did you watch on screeners?
Some of them I watched in a movie theater, and some of them I
Yeah,
watched
me
through.
too.
They don't even have a screener anymore. You have to watch it online, which is
That's right. Yeah.
kind of a pain. But what by myself and studying them, and I do think about the performances, but it feels like, in the old Hays Code, you'd see movies like the classic example is the movie Scarface, where the whole movie goes by, and then suddenly in the last 10 minutes, there's this little moralistic lecture that crime is bad. And it feels like you're going along. I don't know, is it me?
Yeah.
Like you're watching the movie and you go, wait a minute, has the movie suddenly stopped? Is
Right.
that a public service announcement about sensitivity?
Yeah.
And it feels very heavy-handed, and I,
Heavy-handed, contrived. Yeah.
yeah,
I like when we were left to decide what did it mean,
exactly.
when we could relate to it and have our own interpretation. and not be told what it is.
That's so interesting you say that, because that's one of the things I talk about with The Swimmer. When people see it, I go, isn't it great to see a movie where you have no idea what's happening?
Yeah, right,
you have no
right,
idea where it's
right.
going. And yet there's elements of anti-Semitism in the film, racism. There's a lot of interesting social mores of the time.
Yeah.
And we get to decide for our, you know, for ourselves.
Well, Ileana, Kenny will keep you till breakfast.
All righty.
Well, so anyhow, no, this was a pleasure, and thank you so
this,
much for doing
this. This was Ileana. such a joy to meet
you.
You
guys have to stay warm, right? You're both.
I shoveled the driveway again this morning. This is the seventh time in 1 week I've had to shovel. It's not a war, because there are no bullets. But it is a battle with Mother Nature. It is just a battle. And I'm losing. But Ileana, thank you for your time.
Thank you
for your stories, your book.
I'm just going to say that my favorite movie of the year was Dream Scenario. Just have to get that in there.
Wait a second. That was, who was in that movie?
That's Nicolas Cage.
I just heard about that
movie. Yeah. I'll tell you another fascinating movie, which is interesting. I don't think it's got nominated, but it's called Zone of Interest.
I have not seen
it. A very fascinating movie. But on that note,
get the book.
Well, you are a person of interest. Ileana, thank you so much. Thank you so much. Continue the amazing work you do in so many fields. Thank you for spending the time with us today.
Stay healthy.
We will. Stay warm. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye, guys. Have a great day.
Kenny, she was a lot of fun to talk to.
Well, not a lot of fun. Now I can say that I know Ileana Douglas.
I know. I feel like I know her too.
And you know, the thing is,
very personable.
It is amazing that people aren't going to know this, but I mean, her bloodline. I mean, how cool is it that her
Melvin Douglas
was Melvin Douglas?
Yeah, I know.
Many people don't know who Melvin Douglas is, but
she didn't. This was not nepotism. She carved out her own life and career. She really came up through the ranks.
Yeah, right? No, absolutely. I just think, wow, how cool. I mean, and the thing is, I'm sure to her it was just normal that she had her grandfather just live this life and be on the set. But boy,
my life equivalent would be someone probably on a wagon train trying to get through Iowa. The wheel broke. Nobody knew how to fix it, and they stayed here in Iowa. That's my great grandfather.
Oh, my great grandfather. Oh, I'll tell you. Well, I don't know. Nobody cares. But
Melvin Seisler.
He was a carriage builder in Hungary. Built carriages. You know,
I think you told me this, because I dreamt it. No, you told me. I believe they have an episode where you talk about your carriage building great-grandfather.
I should listen to that, because it's a fascinating story. Listen,
you learn about yourself. Kenny, let's say goodbye, you know, because I have to go out and battle this cold. And
unbelievable.
It really is a war.
Well, what's the temperature? Give me the temperature.
It's up to 5. It's up to 5.
But it feels like. I love that thing where they say it's
-5. Well, the feels like is relevant. Wind chill. The other day it was -17. That's just the air. So there's a 20-mile-an-hour wind, and we had 40-mile-an-hour gusts. That
do
can
you have,
feel
do you have
like
any drafts
100
in your
degrees
house?
Below.
Are there any drafts in your house? There's a draft.
My office is. This room
is
I'm
drafty?
In right now is drafty. There's no insulation in this office. So I closed the door at night. I put a heater in here so I could do the show today.
And what about the pipes? Because they say that's the thing that's most endangered, the water pipes.
Yeah, and you have to keep the water going through, because they will ice up.
So you have to keep
literally
running the water.
This is a battle. It's 17 degrees below, or today it's up to 5 degrees. I felt actually sort of warm.
You've lived there how many
break,
years?
I've been here 20 now.
And what would you put this down as far as rating the worst?
I would say this is one of the two worst.
Really?
Because it's just started, too. We've got another snowstorm coming through on Tuesday. Flying becomes difficult. Cars develop ice. My truck is stuck in four-wheel drive, which is great to be stuck in four-wheel drive, but I can't put it back into two-wheel drive because the chassis is iced over.
Now, how are you stocked with supplies?
Well, you know, we have roads and they plow them, and I get to the grocery store.
Oh, you are able.
Yeah, we're able to bust through it. I have four-wheel drive. I
Do you
bust
have
through the
chains? Do you have to
snow.
put chains on your car?
No. The state, Kenneth, of radial tires, snow tires, are such that chains are a thing of the past.
Well, right, but
Good
you have
snow
to, but so
tires.
you have to switch over seasonally to snow
No,
tires.
there you have seasonal tires. Good tires now can be seasonal, all season tires.
Oh, so you don't have to change, you don't have to put on your
No, you don't
winter
have
car.
those days are 20 years ago. Yes.
Okay. All right.
But
Wow.
again, there's cars going by right now. The roads are okay. And I'll get to the store to buy things. But you do look ahead and you see, oh, there's a blizzard coming. We need to stock up for 3 days. Because it took me 2 days to dig out last week. And that's the snow that's with the drift 5 feet up to my back door. It's Ice Station Zebra. It's literally, I noticed once that the North Pole was warmer than we were. Yes.
Well, you know, I'm
And
always fascinated that when people got there and they went through their first winter, and they said,
stayed.
and stayed. But
Well, I posted about this, Kenny, because when it's over and the trees
right.
come to
This pretty
life and the
young.
birds are singing,
It's like pregnancy.
it's magnificent. And
Right.
we know it's coming. We know it's coming. We had a long fall this year. You know, it was nice and warm at the beginning of January, and then a week ago, wham, blam. And it is global warming. To those who don't understand, when the polar ice cap melts, it weakens the jet stream. So now all this cold air is not getting sucked away or pushed away. It's just falling through the Great Plains. Cold Arctic air.
Well, I mean, we're going to just, I don't want to, I guess we're going to, we ended up talking politics about climate change because you just had the caucus and Trump won overwhelmingly. Do people.
We knew it. I mean, there's no mystery there. The good news is only 100,000 out of 720,000 registered
Right.
Republicans voted.
Right.
So,
Right.
yes, weather played a part, but I think also perhaps lack of interest. I think
Right.
perhaps it looks like there's more momentum than there is. That was a weak turnout,
Right.
and
But I'm
that's
just curious
encouraging.
if your neighbors consider this kind of weather part of climate change, or they just dismiss it as just that's.
My neighbors consider this that's dismissed. This isn't climate change.
Gotcha.
They can't understand that it's that global warming leads to colder temperatures. The science escapes
That's
them.
why you
And
can't
I've
say
tried to
global warming.
explain.
You have to say climate change because
You have to
global
say
warming,
climate
they
change.
completely. How could it be global warming when it's so cold
Right.
outside?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. They don't understand that the ice melts and the sea level goes up and it changes that equation completely. The moisture in the air, the storms are bigger, yada, yada, yada. All right. Kenneth, I'm going to say goodbye to you now because I have to go out and battle this thing. I want to thank everyone for, and Ileana Douglas especially, for coming on and talking about her books and her life and all of her great stories. Kenneth, good to see you as always. Thank you
You
for
very
watching and
well.
listening. We're on all the popular podcast platforms. We have our own YouTube channel. We'd love it if you gave us a thumbs up at the Gary and Kenny Show, and we are on streaming TV on DBTV. Thank you all, and good night.
Good night.